Hello there. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. It just so happens to be my show, and it's an open line Friday, so you can call in 877-973-7425. Glad you're with me today. I hope you have a great weekend planned. All right. I got to ask you a question, and I noticed this. Wonder if you noticed it as well. Have you noticed there tends to be direct correlation and a proportional relationship between how bad things are going for the Democrats and how much the media focuses on January 6th? The media is loath to. And, you know, I've been in politics really since the early 2000s. And I started Red State with some friends of mine in 2004. And I have noticed, as long as I have been doing this, that the media always focuses on Republican divisions and never likes to focus on Democrat divisions. The Republican split, the Republican crack up, the Republican civil war, the Republican divide, the Republican debate, the Republican inner turmoil. It's always media fodder. When the same thing happens on the Democratic side, the media tries to, don't look here, look over there, look at January 6th, look at January 6th. Oh, those crazy Republicans. Now there's a problem here. The data shows, the polling shows that voters don't tie Republican elected officials to January 6th, except for Donald Trump. There are a lot of Republicans who view January 6th as just fine, and you do need to understand, if you're one of those, that the overwhelming majority of the public does not view it as fine. They do view it as a bad day. I am one of those Republicans. The protesting was fine. The bashing the doors into the Capitol to try to get in was not good. But it was a day. It was not a comparable to 9/11. It was not comparable to the Civil War. And yet, not only does the left say it, but if, like Ken Burns, clearly a broken man, goes on television and says, I did the Civil War documentary, and so I'm an expert, and this is as bad as the Civil War. No, the hell it's not. It is not. It's just not. In fact, they had the Justice for January 6th event the other weekend, and there were more members of the press there than there were people there protesting. The media wants to keep it alive, and in large part, they want to keep it alive, one, to tie Republicans to it as a strategy that James Carville articulated so that the Democrats might perhaps be able to mitigate historic standard losses that the party in power has in midterm elections, but two, so that you don't pay any attention to the crack up in the Democratic Party right now. And it's happening. I'm looking at CNN.com right now because CNN.com is actually more liberal than, well, it used to be more liberal than the CNN network. And now I don't know between Chris Cuomo, oh, we'll get to Chris Cuomo, and Don Lemon and the like. I don't know. But I mean, their focus now on the Texas migrant camp is cleared. And Gabby Petito a bit. But then you have the judge orders Trump org to address subpoenas by New York Attorney General. And then you have Trump-backed Arizona audit confirms the obvious. Biden won. CNN shows rally-goer video of January 6th attack. See his reaction. DOJ unseals Capitol riot charges against FreedomWorks organizer. And they try to keep the story alive. And I've noticed that they do this more and more as the Democrats are fighting more and more. Now let's delve into the Democratic fighting. The Democrats have problems. The media would prefer us not talk about them. The problems with the Democrats is that the base of the party is not as progressive as the donors of the party at this point. See, the base of the Democratic Party actually does remain Hispanic and Black. They tend to give the biggest pool of votes to the Democrats. White people tend to vote Republican. Married white people, very much male and female, tend to vote Republican. But at the upper echelons of the Democratic Party, the people who are writing the checks, it's a bunch of rich, woke, secular progressives, many of whom are single or on their fifth or sixth spouse. And they're the people who drive the agenda of the Democratic Party. As more and more rich, white, woke people move into the Democratic Party, they're crowding out the black and Hispanic voters who are looking for a new party. Hispanic voters are much more likely, given historic issues and not anchored in American history. Hispanic voters, largely immigrants to this country, they move are more likely to move to the GOP, and they are. As the Democratic Party, for example, advances an economic agenda that will bankrupt the country, that is largely premised on an embrace of socialism, that is fixated on a Green New Deal that will drive up costs in the country and harm poor people, it makes rich, white, woke people feel good about themselves, but it crowds out of the marketplace and drives up the cost of black and Hispanic voters. The fact of the matter is, you raise the cost of gas in this country to discourage people from buying fossil fuel burning vehicles and to go with electric, you're actually raising costs on the working class and the poor, many of whom are black and Hispanic. You raise the costs of travel, you're raising their costs. You raise the costs of food, you raise their costs. I played for you the clip the other week of Jen Psaki and the Council of Economic Advisors guy talking about how food costs have gone up. In particular, meat costs have gone up. It was actually kind of funny. I got an email from a guy who was blasting me. He says, I work at Publix, and it's the vegetable and the fruit costs that have gone up. It's not the meat costs that have gone up, you idiot. It's like all I'm doing is telling you what they said. No, you double down. And all I did was play the clip. But their clip is beef, pork, and poultry costs are going up. Vegetable costs are going down.
Brian will discuss the details of the data, namely that beef, pork, and poultry are the real drivers of increased grocery store bills.
And then Brian Deese goes on to say that vegetable and produce costs are going down. It's not a coincidence. It is not a coincidence that at the beginning of this administration, the academic report came out, I think from the University of Michigan, saying that if you wanted to solve global warming, you needed to decrease eating meats and increase eating fruits and vegetables. And suddenly, behold, thanks to government policy, beef, poultry, and pork prices have gone up and vegetable and fruit prices have gone down. And here's the remarkable thing. I go to the grocery store. I do the grocery shopping in my family. Fruit costs and vegetable costs, they ain't going down. If they're going down, it must have been because they were super high there for a while and I must have missed it. Because they're expensive too. And it's in the Green New Deal, in the agenda that the left wants, that's going to happen more and more. A buddy of mine who works for Springer Mountain Farms just texted me and said that, yeah, poultry prices are going up. I see it at the grocery store. Buy wings for Sunday night to throw on my Rectech, and the price of the wings has gone up. We tend to do at my house on Sunday nights, I grill hamburgers and fry French fries for the kids and then have my buddies over for bourbon and cigar night, and I smoke wings. The cost of the burgers have gone up. The cost of the frozen fries have gone up. The cost of the chicken's gone up. And the Democrats are starting to realize they got a problem because as they advance their agenda for climate change, those costs are going up. And some Democrats are opposed because those Democrats are mindful in their position of who they represent, that they represent people who can't afford those costs. Kristen Sinema in Arizona, a lot of voters in Arizona are white retirees and younger migrant families, immigrant families to the country. They can't afford those costs. In West Virginia, Joe Manchin is in charge of the environmental policies for the Biden administration because he's the chairman of the Energy Committee for the Democrats. And what's Manchin doing? Manchin's trying to slow walk in the Green New Deal reforms because he's afraid that not only will you put a bunch of people out of work in the coal industry and the natural gas industry, but you'll raise prices on people. And the progressive Democrats are true believers who are livid, livid that Joe Manchin would do this. They're livid that moderate Democrats would be uncomfortable with this stuff. And the fights are breaking out among the Democrats. You have the progressives who are taking an all or nothing approach on infrastructure. You either pass everything or you pass nothing is their position. And the moderates are like, look, we'll take the bipartisan infrastructure deal, BIF, they're calling it, BIF. We'll take our friend BIF, but we won't take it all. We'll take the bipartisan infrastructure deal, but we don't want the $3.5 trillion package. And the progressives are saying, well, you know what? You get nothing. And the moderates are like, all right, deal. We'd rather nothing than your agenda. And so what does the media do? You've got to pay attention to January 6th. You've got to pay attention to January 6th. Look at January 6th. There's another indictment that's come down on January 6th. No, no, no. Don't look over there. Don't look at AOC. Don't look at the fighting. Don't look at Representative Deutsch going after Representative DeLay. Don't look at that. Look at January 6th. Look at Donald Trump is going to Georgia. Pay attention to that. Don't pay attention to this other stuff. Yo, this is not a new narrative. This has been happening. I shouldn't take credit for it. Friends of mine started Red State in 2004. They put me in charge of it. We converted from redstate.org to redstate.com. That's still going on today. I left in 2016. But from 2004, I started writing day one at that site. I have pointed out that the media never likes to cover intra-Democrat fights. They will cover till they're blue in the face the Republican fights. They hate to cover the Democratic fights. Why? Because they're on the Democratic team. They don't like to cover their own squabbles. They would prefer that you think of the Democratic Party as a united front. But the problem with the Democratic Party is a greater problem than what the Republicans have right now, in large part because the anti-Trump, hardcore anti-Trump Republicans have left the party. You still got people like me. I don't care for him. I was happy to support his reelection, but he's not my guy. I would prefer someone else, but I like the sort of policies, most, not all, that he were getting. And you got a lot of those Republicans there willing to suck it up and go along to avoid the Democrats, to avoid Joe Biden. Some of the hardcore ones have gone over to the Democrats, the Bill Kristols of the world and the like. But now you've got this problem on the Democratic side. Because you've got union workers, and the union workers are at odds with each other. You got the pro-abortion people. The pro-abortion people are at odds with the Hispanic Catholics who are Democrat. You got the Hispanic and the black residents of this country who are actually more pro-police than the white secular progressives of the Democratic Party. You've got the white secular progressives of the Democratic Party who can't stand the blue-collar union voters who still vote Democrat. And on 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 it goes. The fighting and the division. And by the way, it's not actually sustainable, and you have this problem coming on two fronts for the Democratic Party. Joe Biden was the man the Democrats had to have to beat Donald Trump who could hold the Democrats together, and Nancy Pelosi was the woman you had to have as Speaker of the House to keep everyone together because she knew how to do it. And Nancy Pelosi's retiring, and Joe Biden is done after this term. And who do the Democrats have for their bench? That's another part of the problem, and that's part of the amplification of the fight because the Republicans had a great year in 2010. They had a great year in 2012. They had a great year in 2014. They had a great year in 2016. They had a bad year in 2018, and then they had a good year in 2020. Republicans, since Barack Obama has been president, have only had really one bad electoral year, 2018. The Democrats have otherwise been decimated. They don't have a bench. This is one of the problems that we have in Georgia. Stacey Abrams has kind of ruled the roost here. She's prevented other Democrats from growing in stature to protect her own position in the party. The Democrats in Georgia don't have a great deep bench. And you see that in Texas as well. Beto O'Rourke and Wendy Davis have for so long, these rich white people who steal the limelight from everyone else. They dominate Texas politics. You have the Charlie Crist of the world in Florida. The Democrats don't have a deep bench. And to the extent they have any bench, the media gives disproportionate coverage to their progressives and try to make them heroes. And they're the people most out of touch with the rest of the American public. And it's causing real fractious issues within the Democratic Party. Meanwhile, the Republicans are all over here saying, DeSantis looks pretty good. Crenshaw looks pretty good. Hawley looks pretty good. Haley looks pretty good. Cotton looks pretty good. Cruz looks pretty good. The Republicans have options and the Democrats don't. So pay attention to January 6th, y'all. Pay attention to January 6th because that's where the real story is, not the Democratic divisions. Americans continue to navigate through multiple crises this year. We the People, a Bradley speaker series, offers insights and ideas on the current challenges we face from some of the remarkable organizations the Bradley Foundation supports. Visit bradleyfdn.org/liberty to watch their most recent episode, which features Stephen Sokup, author of The Dictatorship of Woke Capital, How Political Correctness Captured Big Business, an Encounter Books publication. In this episode, Sokup discusses the left's gradual takeover of corporate America and why the free market hasn't been able to prevent it, the dangerous impact of shareholder activism, and efforts to push back on it. That's Bradley with an L-E-Y at the end, fdn.org/liberty to watch the video. New episodes debut weekly, so go back often, subscribe to their YouTube channel. Be notified when new ones are posted. That's bradleyfdn.org/liberty. To start the program is brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. They want to help your business become a bigger business. They don't work with individuals, they work with businesses. So if you're in charge of the finances of your business and you want need a loan, six figures and above, we're not talking small change here, six figures and above, you need to reach out to First Liberty. Go to firstlibertyga.com, firstlibertyga.com. Spend 10 minutes with them. See if you're a good fit for them, them for you, and they want to help your business grow. If so, firstlibertyga.com. Buddy of mine just texted me, taunting me. His iPhone has arrived. I just pulled up the UPS live tracker map. The UPS vehicle on which my iPhone sits is three streets down from me. Do you know when they tell me that my iPhone is going to be here? Between 5:30 and 8 p.m. This is literally three streets away. And it's going to be 5:30 when it gets here. Not everybody's having iPhones delivered today. And then, I mean, just the taunting pictures of my friends who are getting their iPhones. I got a problem and I need a 12-step program to get out of my Apple addiction. And the new laptops are coming soon too. I got to boost my advertising for the show so I can get a new laptop. I need one. Mine is, I do so much video now. It just, the whole computer slows down. And then freaking Apple Mail, I got so many email messages. I think I've got right now, how many? I've got 2,768 unread messages. Yeah. Okay, we need to move on. Enough about me. Can I just, so Chris Cuomo. Chris Cuomo is in the news, and I don't really know what to make of this story. Chris Cuomo is the CNN anchor. His brother was the governor of New York, now deposed for sexual harassment. And Chris Cuomo's former boss went to the New York Times and put in an op-ed that years ago, as Chris Cuomo was leaving ABC, he went to give her a hug on his way out the door, grabbed her backside as her husband watched. And then the next day sent her an apology that it was very inappropriate. He was sorry to her husband to disrespect the man's wife, sorry to her. It was a dumb, boneheaded thing. He shouldn't have done it. Listen, I have relationships with some of my bosses over the years that are deeply hilarious, fun, friendly relationships where we have done things to each other that would be deeply inappropriate and get you fired for doing. Except we have the relationship where we know we can get away with it. I used to have a receptionist who worked at my old law firm who, if I went in and didn't give her a tight hug, she would tell me that she was going to report me to HR. She said she graded the sexual harassment and it better be good or else. I mean, you all know there are people who you have these sorts of relationships with, and then there are those you don't. There are people I work with I would never consider doing that. Never. People I have fantastic relationships with. And by the way, all the ones that I had those relationships, they're all guys. I've never worked with a woman who was a supervisor or a boss who I would ever do anything like that with. And Chris Cuomo hugs this woman, grabs her backside, squeezes her butt cheek, and says, I can do that now that I'll work with you. What? Who does that sort of stuff? If they don't have that sort of relationship, and clearly he did not have that sort of relationship with his woman, or she would not be in the New York Times blasting. But the other thing here is that it seems like the New York Times, they sent a push alert for the story. I got it on my phone from the New York Times app. They sent a push alert wanting people to read the story. Clearly the New York Times is ready to destroy the Cuomo legacy, destroy the Cuomos now. And I'm totally here for the fighting against the Cuomos. Chris Cuomo was adult and he shouldn't have done it, but is it really that big a story? If you've been behind the wheel of a high-performance sports car, you realize how much better a car can be. You never want to settle for a regular car again. I feel that way with my X-Chair From the moment I first sat down and I understood how many consider X chair to be the finest office chair in the world. Can your current office chair give you a massage while you're working? My X chair can. And as a guy in radio who sits in this chair for 3 hours a day, plus an additional 3 hours doing show prep, I can tell you it's worth it. It can also heat up. It can cool down. That's what my X chair can do. I bet yours can't. It's all the Elevax massage and temperature regulation, exclusively designed and made for X chair. Once you feel it, once you realize the difference, you're not going to go back. You're going to want one of these. Try X chair yourself, risk-free for 30 days. Once you realize how much better your chair can be, you're never going to go back. I promise, I didn't, and I had a really fancy chair, and then I got my X chair. There's no going back. Go to xchaireric.com now with the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com, for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Hi there. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. It is almost the weekend. I'm sure you're all ready for the weekend, as you probably should be. I want to spend a few more minutes circling back to the story on the Border Patrol, because it actually, okay. I try to tell people, don't be so angry. How do I want to do this? So my friend Rush Limbaugh passed away. I should not be here noon to three. Rush had a form of lung cancer. You know, I get people all the time that tell me, oh, you should stop smoking cigars. Look what happened to Rush Limbaugh. First of all, you don't inhale the smoke into your lungs with a cigar. You don't ever try it. My buddy Cliff is proof of that. There's a bush in Las Vegas that is dead. He has had a genetic form of lung cancer, pretty much the same one my wife has. And they caught my wife's early. They caught his too late. And he inspired a lot of people to get into talk radio. And the people who got into talk radio, a lot of them had their own personalities and their own ideas and their own thoughts. And then others got in and, instead of being themselves, decided to be their impression of who they thought Rush was. And I was very fortunate because, you know, I was his guest host for a while. And before and after I filled in for him, we maintained a friendship. And I got interviewed by a news outlet the other day. And I said, one of the actual great things about Rush is I commented to him one time. We were talking about me doing syndicated radio. And I said, I would rather stay filling in for you because, I mean, I don't even have a shot at being the best as long as you're on radio. And he fell out laughing and he said, you don't ever have to worry about that because even if I'm dead, you'll still never be as good as me. And, you know, there's actually something very refreshing about that because it's very liberating to be yourself. And so I can have my own personality. I don't have to do a bad impression of Rush because I know I'm never going to be Rush Limbaugh. I don't have aspirations to be Rush Limbaugh, a poor version of Rush Limbaugh. I want to be the best version of Eric Erickson I can be. But there is, some people misinterpreted what Rush Limbaugh did. And one of the ways the imitators of Rush have moved forward, instead of being themselves, is they just want to be angry, pissed off partisans. And they want to scream and they want to vent and they want to rile you up because there is some thinking now that the best way to keep you engaged is to keep you enraged. And if you stay enraged all the time, you're going to keep coming back for more to fuel the rage. At some point, it's ridiculously exhausting. I can't live in a permanently pissed off state. I'm sorry. I can't. No one can. It's not healthy. So all the time I tell people, don't be angry. God's got this. God's in charge. He's got a plan. There's no reason to be angry. If you're not a believer, still don't be angry. Find ways to laugh at the other side. And I think that's sound advice. It's good advice. But I have said, and this is one of those times, that there are moments where you should be angry. And there are things you should be angry about. You can't be angry about everything. You know, my kid now, I wish she would unplug from the news, and she can't help herself to a degree because she's my kid and I get it. And she hears about all the news, and it can cause anxiety. I mean, it can. Hear about stuff, and there's nothing you can do about it. C.S. Lewis, and I can't find it. I know I read it, and I know it was C.S. Lewis. Someone asked him one time, what do you do about the people in the far-off places who are going through tragic times? And he said he does not think God means for you to care. And he didn't mean that you don't care about the people, but you've got to be able to discern what can you control and what you can't. And among the things that you cannot control, what are the things that you cannot control that you should still care about and you shouldn't? And I would submit to you that one of the reasons anxiety has increased so much today is because we're such a global society, a 24/7 plugged in society, and we see so much around the world, from volcanoes to earthquakes to drought to despair to starvation to bad people doing things, and we want to care about it all because we're caring people, and there's nothing we can do to control it, and maybe we'd be better off if we unplugged. In fact, study after study after study after study shows the more people unplug from the 24/7 news grind and social media, the better off they are mentally, their well-being is better, that they're happier, that they're more well-rounded, they get out of their house, they love their neighbor, they know their neighbor, they're into their community, they're engaged in ways the people who are stuck in front of their phone or their TV or their internet connection, they're not. So I tell people all the time, you can't be mad at everything. But I do think there are some things you can be mad about, and it takes some level of discernment to figure out what to be mad about. And there are things that you may be mad about that I'm not mad about, and sometimes you may be mad at me for not being mad. Lord knows I get hate mail sometimes from people who I tell you not to be mad about something, and those people are so mad about it, they send me an all caps email yelling at me that I should be mad about it, and screw you for not being as mad as I am about blah, 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 whatever it is. But I actually am mad about the Border Patrol situation. Because, you know, part of me, I was taught to respect authority, and there certainly is a strain of American currency now and thinking where people, nobody on either side really respects authority. And frankly, authorities have given us plenty of reasons not to respect them and to distrust them. And I totally get that too. I do. But also, and this is important, law enforcement continues in this country to be made the bad guy by the left. There are bad, corrupt police officers in this country. There are bad, corrupt Border Patrol agents in this country. But they're not the majority. They're not even the predominant part of the minority. And for the Biden administration to see a photographer's pictures, and what is a photograph? What is a photograph? A photograph is captured light. Captured light of a fraction of a second of time. It is an image of time because time, an image of time, is a pattern of light that falls on your eyes at any moment. And the photograph freezes that time, freezes that light into an image, a still image, not a moving image. And the photographer who took the pictures of the Border Patrol agents who were using their reins of their horses to steer their horses, that were confused by ignorant progressives as being whips or whip-like cords, in the words of the Associated Press. The photographer who took the picture says he never saw the agents do anything untoward. In fact, what he saw were Haitian refugees trying to run around the horses to get away from them, and the agents containing the Haitian refugees and getting them back across the border. And what happened? The picture went viral and was mischaracterized by people whose default presumption is always to hate law enforcement. And what did Joe Biden do? Instead of having the backs of the federal employees who are risking their lives to being away from their family on horseback in the desert, trying to keep our border secure, he threw them under the bus. He attacked them. He said they were to blame. And there would be consequences and there would be actions, and they've taken their horses away. The horses, frankly, they need those horses to do their job. Given the terrain, they need horses, not Jeeps, not buggies, not Humvees, not tanks. They need horses. And they're being punished not because a photographer took a picture. The photographers come forward and said they didn't do anything wrong. He was witnessing them. He had his lens on them. They weren't doing anything wrong. It's not the photographers. It's the people who willfully misinterpreted the photography. People who have said nothing about the border, who avoided talking about the border, who avoided like plague the issue until they could yet again blame law enforcement. And I think we do have to be upset about that, at least if not angry. We have to be upset about the fact that the Biden administration chose to blame the Border Patrol even after the story was debunked, even after it came out. It wasn't whips, it was the horse reins. They weren't whipping anyone. They were steering the horses. I don't understand the strain on the left of blame law enforcement. There are members of law enforcement that are bad, and I realize that people have been galvanized by the stories of Ahmaud Arbery. It was a horrible story, and justice will finally prevail, thankfully. It almost didn't, had a YouTube video not come up. This is the guy down in South Georgia who was shot by two guys, and the local DA, it seems, might have helped them try to get away with it until they were caught by a YouTube video. Or George Floyd in that situation, and there are situations around the country. But those are the exceptions, not the rule, and those are police officers, not the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol does a thankless, tireless, tiresome job at the border, keeping our border secure as best they can when the politicians in Washington, many of them, don't want to secure it at all and yet claim it's secure. And now these Border Patrol agents are the bad guys? How? They didn't do anything wrong. That does bother me. And I think it should bother everybody. And unfortunately, and this bothers me more, is there are some people who will still cling to the mythology than the truth so that they can continue to blame the Border Patrol because it is convenient for them in what they do and how they see the world to blame the Border Patrol. I'm learning more and more. There are a lot of people out there across the board, across the aisle, across partisan spaces, who when they are met by an inconvenient truth or fact, presume that the truth or the fact is neither true nor fact, so that they can continue to cling to the worldview they had uninterrupted, to cling to the beliefs they had uninterrupted. My niece got COVID. She's doing well. For a while there, she was pretty sick. Went to the doctor. The doctor prescribed her ivermectin. Said she had inflammation. She took the ivermectin. She's recovering well. The doctor said that this doctor has been prescribing ivermectin to patients and has found that a lot of them don't have to take the monoclonal antibodies. If they get ivermectin to their system early, it wipes out the inflammation. It helps people recover faster. She's been doing this for a year. Because of some people who rushed out some overstated studies on ivermectin, and lied about their results and exaggerated the results, the FDA has cracked down on it. You should be mad at the people who lied about the early results. But the FDA cracked down on it. A couple of idiots went and got horse dose ivermectin. And the whole media began to ridicule anyone who took ivermectin. This doctor's been doing it for a year. Said now she's got to send people to small pharmacies to get it because the big pharmacies are too scared to fill it or just as principal won't fill it. And yet it had been helping people. And now she's having a hard time giving it to people, which she has seen it help. And I told the story on social media and a bunch of people said, no, you can't. That's a lie. That's not true. That didn't happen. Like, yes, it happened. But their worldview, their belief system is that it doesn't work because people told them it doesn't work. And so here comes some evidence that, yes, actually, she turned the corner pretty rapidly after it was given to her by it, prescribed by a doctor, not horse dose, but human dose. It's a human medicine. Turned the corner rapidly. And these people, no, it can't be. It just can't be true. It must have been something else. Like, no, I'm telling you, it's my freaking niece. She finally sent me a picture saying, you can put this up as proof. People still don't want to believe it. They don't want to believe the truth because it shatters what they think is true. What they think is true is a lie, and they can't believe the truth. And whether it's that or whether it's the Border Patrol, these are the sorts of things that actually I do have serious qualms with people across the board, across ideologies, people who cannot confront a fact and change their thinking based on the facts, and so they presume the facts are false so that they never have to change their thinking. It's a profound self-centeredness and laziness that has creeped into society, and we're seeing it now with the Border Patrol, where the Border Patrol did nothing wrong, but the people who bought into it can't now say, oops, my bad. They've got to now ignore the actual truth of the matter and the facts so that they can double down and make law enforcement yet again look bad when law enforcement did nothing but their jobs and did them well. But who cares about the truth when you can rally your base by yet again excoriating law enforcement for keeping the country safe? Hi there. It is Eric Erickson. I sure hope you're ready for the weekend, and hopefully you're going to have beautiful weather wherever you are. I'm going to go hit the golf course this afternoon. Y'all, I'm really, 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 really bad at golf. And listen, a bunch of you email whenever I mention and say, hey, I'd love to play golf with you. You don't understand how bad I am. I'm not Philip bad, but I'm bad. I'm really, although he was good the last time we played, but usually he loses more balls to me. I'm a bad golfer. When I was in law school, I worked for the partner at the law firm who threw all the parties, and he could take back, if he had a big party, he could take open unopened liquor bottles back to the liquor store, but he couldn't take back the beer. So he would give it to me, and my buddies and I would get a cooler and go on the golf course and spend the day drinking and hitting golf balls. And I got great at drinking beer and never really got good at hitting golf balls. And I go to Hilton Head frequently, although not enough. One day I want a house in Hilton Head, and I get lessons down there when I go, but I need more lessons. But I do like to play just to get out on the golf course, enjoy nature, have a glass of bourbon and hit golf balls and smoke cigars. And it just, you know, I feel grown up. That's been the wonderful thing about being in my 40s is that I still feel like I have most of the energy from my 20s, but now I have the revenue to be able to enjoy myself. That's what I intend to do because the weather is fantastic. Now, tomorrow, while the weather is fantastic, the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, is coming to Georgia, where I am. He'll be about 30 minutes from me, holding a rally with Herschel Walker. There's a report out there that the Senate Republicans are starting to come to terms with the fact that Walker may be unstoppable, and they better figure out how they can get him across the finish line. I would advise the Republicans to come up with a governing agenda that Walker can run on, and not just attack Warnock as a socialist, because they tried that last time and it didn't work. Warnock has some terrible votes now. He is who we said he was. He is the far left person, and you could do that. But also, some people want a reason to vote for Herschel Walker beyond just Donald Trump. In fact, some people won't vote for him because Donald Trump is now quoted saying as Herschel's doing it for him. It's going to be an interesting rally. I'm curious to how many people are, because, you know, I've got a ton of friends of mine in the Middle Georgia area, and none of them are really buzzing about this event in the way they used to when President Trump would come. It's also college football day, and so a lot of people are going to be distracted instead by college football. They're going to have some viewing parties down there just in case. Y'all have a good weekend. See you Monday.